Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 363, titled Operation North Woods. This is being recorded on June 16th of the year 2002. In connection with the events of September 11th, it's worth studying some of the history, not only of international fascism, but also of some of the extremist elements that have historically existed within the U.S. national security establishment. And we're going to be taking a look at the extreme proposals put forward by the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and in particular the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff at the time, General Lyman Lemnitzer. In opposition to Kennedy's White House, the Joint Chiefs had put together a series of plans to stage terrorist incidents to be blamed on Cuba, and which in turn were going to serve as a pretext for invading and destroying Cuba. I do not want to be misunderstood as claiming that I believe that the September 11th attacks were a provocation. I think it was a relatively complex event, and time permitting, and for the record program number 365 next week, I'm going to present some analysis of this very, very complex event. I believe that September 11th was an attack by the underground Reich, as I call it, on the United States, that it was aided and abetted by elements within our own intelligence system, infiltrators from the underground Reich, infiltrators from the related Islamo-fascist milieu. I do not believe that it was a provocation, although obviously it's possible that I'm wrong. I do think there are elements that would not be at all sorry to see a development like that, and that rather than conspiring necessarily to advance it, would be only too willing to take an opportunistic view of the event. Nonetheless, with proposals for a shadow government in the event that Congress gets nuked, with truly apocalyptic scenarios being floated on a regular basis, with the possibility that mismanagement of this very important war could result in the bankrupting of America, if not in its destruction, I do think that it's worth taking into account the types of extremists who are no stranger to the Bush administration. I would note in the context of what we're about to listen to that General Lyman Lemnitzer was part of an axis that overlapped people like Alan Dulles, the Operation Sunrise negotiations between the SS elements in Italy and Alan Dulles. Lemnitzer actually handled the military end of those negotiations. And I would note that you'll also be hearing the name of Paul Nitze, who worked with Dylan Reed. Paul Nitze, along with Alan Dulles and the Bush family progenitors, was part of this transatlantic financial and industrial axis that helped to elevate the Third Reich from an economic standpoint and was complicit in their activities. I discuss that at considerable length in For the Record 361, Networking. So note that even though these events took place in the early 1960s, it is the same milieu which ultimately spawned George Bush. And I would also note that the extremist views held by people like Lemnitzer are no stranger to the Bush administration, or not strange to the Bush administration. For our information about Operation North Woods, we're going to be taking a look at a recent book by James Bamford, the author of The Puzzle Palace, a book about the National Security Agency. This is a follow-up volume about the NSA. It's called Body of Secrets, Anatomy of the Ultra-Secret National Security Agency. It was published in soft cover and copyrighted 2001 and 2002. It's published by Anchor Books. That is a subdivision of Random House, and the ISBN number for the soft cover is 0-385-49907-8. And discussing Operation North Woods and General Lyman Lemnitzer, by the way, later you're going to hear reference to a Senator Gore. That is Albert Gore Sr. That's Al Gore's father, who was a United States Senator from Tennessee and who was successfully targeted for election defeat by the Nixon administration because of the senior Senator Gore's support for civil rights and his opposition to the Vietnam War. So that's the Gore that you will hear referred to. In Body of Secrets, James Bamford writes of Operation North Woods. Although no one in Congress could have known at the time, Lemnitzer and the Joint Chiefs had quietly slipped over the edge. According to secret and long-hidden documents obtained for Body of Secrets, the Joint Chiefs of Staff drew up and approved plans for what may be the most corrupt plan ever created by the U.S. government. In the name of anti-communism, they proposed launching a secret and bloody war of terrorism against their own country in order to trick the American public into supporting an ill-conceived war that they intended to launch against Cuba. Codenamed Operation Northwoods, the plan, which had the written approval of the chairman and every member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, called for innocent people to be shot on American streets, for boats carrying refugees fleeing Cuba to be sunk on the high seas, for a wave of violent terrorism to be launched in Washington, D.C., Miami, and elsewhere. People would be framed for bombings they did not commit. Planes would be hijacked. Using phony evidence, all of it would be blamed on Castro, thus giving Lemnitzer and his cabal the excuse, as well as the public and international backing they needed to launch their war. The idea may actually have originated with President Eisenhower in the last days of his administration. With the Cold War hotter than ever and the recent U-2 scandal fresh in the public's memory, the old general wanted to go out with a win. He wanted desperately to invade Cuba in the weeks leading up to Kennedy's inauguration. Indeed, on January 3, 1961, he told Lemnitzer and other aides in the cabinet room that he would move against Castro before the inauguration, if only the Cubans gave him a really good excuse. Then, with time growing short, Eisenhower floated an idea. If Castro failed to provide that excuse, perhaps he said the United States, quote, could think of manufacturing something that would be generally acceptable, unquote. What he was suggesting was a pretext, a bombing, an attack, an act of sabotage carried out secretly against the United States by the United States. Its purpose would be to justify the launching of a war. It was a dangerous suggestion by a desperate president. Although no such war took place, the idea was not lost on General Lemnitzer. But he and his colleagues were frustrated by Kennedy's failure to authorize their plan and angry that Castro had not provided an excuse to invade. Skipping down. Operation Northwoods called for a war in which many patriotic Americans and innocent Cubans would die senseless deaths, all to satisfy the egos of twisted generals back in Washington, safe in their taxpayer-financed homes and limousines. One idea seriously considered involved the launch of John Glenn, the first American to orbit the Earth. On February 20, 1962, Glenn was to lift off from Cape Canaveral, Florida on his historic journey. The flight was to carry the banner of America's virtues on truth, freedom, and democracy into orbit high over the planet. But Lemnitzer and his chiefs had a different idea. They proposed to General Edward Lansdale that should the rocket explode and kill Glenn, quote, the objective is to provide irrevocable proof that the fault lies with the communists et al. Cuba. This would be accomplished, Lemnitzer continued, by manufacturing various pieces of evidence which would provide electronic interference, which would prove electronic interference on the part of the Cubans, unquote. Thus, as NASA prepared to send the first American into space, the Joint Chiefs of Staff were preparing to use John Glenn's possible death as a pretext to launch a war. Glenn lifted into history without mishap, leaving Lemnitzer and the chiefs to begin devising new plots which they suggested be carried out within the time frame of the next few months, unquote. Among the actions recommended was a series of well-coordinated incidents to take place in and around, unquote, the U.S. Navy base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. This included dressing friendly Cubans in Cuban military uniforms and then have them, quote, start riots near the main gate of the base. Others would pretend to be saboteur inside the base. Ammunition would be blown up, fires started, aircraft sabotaged, mortars fired at the base with damage to installations, unquote. The suggested operations grew progressively more outrageous. Another called for an action similar to the infamous incident in February of 1898 when an explosion aboard the battleship Maine in Havana Harbor killed 266 U.S. sailors. Although the exact cause of the explosion remained undetermined, it sparked the Spanish-American War with Cuba. Incited by the deadly blast, more than 1 million men volunteered for duty. Lemnitzer and his generals came up with a similar plan. Quote, we could blow up a U.S. ship in Guantanamo Bay and blame Cuba, they proposed, again quoting, Casualty lists in U.S. newspapers would cause a helpful wave of national indignation, unquote. There seemed no limit to their fanaticism. Quote, we could develop a communist Cuban terror campaign in the Miami area, in other Florida cities, and even in Washington, they wrote. Again quoting, the terror campaign could be pointed at Cuban refugees seeking haven in the United States. We could sink a boatload of Cubans en route to Florida, real or simulated. We could foster attempts on lives of Cuban refugees in the United States, even to the extent of wounding in instances to be widely publicized, unquote. Bombings were proposed, false arrests, and hijackings. Exploding a few plastic bombs in carefully chosen spots, the arrest of Cuban agents, and the release of prepared documents substantiating Cuban involvement also would be helpful in projecting the idea of an irresponsible government, unquote. Advantage can be taken of the sensitivity of the Dominican Republic Air Force to intrusions within their national airspace, quote, Cuban, unquote, B-26 or C-46 type aircraft could make cane-burning raids at night. Soviet bloc incendiaries could be found. This could be coupled with Cuban messages to the communist underground in the Dominican Republic and Cuban shipments of arms which would be found or intercepted on the beach. Use of MiG-type aircraft by U.S. pilots could provide additional provocation, unquote. Hijacking attempts against civil air and surface craft could appear to continue as harassing measures condoned by the government of Cuba, unquote. Among the most elaborate schemes was to create an incident which will demonstrate convincingly that a Cuban aircraft has attacked and shot down a chartered civil airliner en route from the United States to Jamaica, Guatemala, Panama, or Venezuela. The destination would be chosen only to cause the flight plan route to cross Cuba. The passengers could be a group of college students off on a holiday or any grouping of persons with a common interest to support chartering a non-scheduled flight, unquote. Lemnitzer and the Joint Chiefs worked out a complex deception. An aircraft at Elgin Air Force Base would be painted and numbered as an exact duplicate for a civil registered aircraft belonging to a CIA proprietary organization in the Miami area. At a designated time, the duplicate would be substituted for the actual civil aircraft and would be loaded with the selected passengers, all boarded under carefully prepared aliases. The actual registered aircraft would be converted to a drone, a remotely controlled unmanned aircraft. Takeoff times of the drone aircraft and the actual aircraft will be scheduled to allow a rendezvous south of Florida. From the rendezvous point to the passenger aircraft will descend to minimum altitude and go directly into an auxiliary field at Elgin Air Force Base, where arrangements will have been made to evacuate the passengers and return the aircraft to its original status. The drone aircraft, meanwhile, will continue to fly the filed flight plan. When over Cuba, the drone will be transmitting on the international distress frequency a Mayday, unquote, message stating that he is under attack by Cuban MiG aircraft. The transmission will be interrupted by the destruction of the aircraft, which will be triggered by radio signal. This will allow ICAO, International Civil Aviation Organization, radio stations in the Western Hemisphere, to tell the U.S. what has happened to the aircraft, instead of the U.S. trying to, quote, sell, unquote, the incident. By the way, I would interrupt, as Bamford has pointed out, even though the Operation Northwoods plans were never actualized vis-a-vis Cuba, the possibility that some of these plans would later have been put into effect, for example, the KAL-007 shootdown over Sakhalin Island or the Kamchatka Peninsula comes to mind in connection with this, the possibility that some of these scenarios could have later been implemented is not one to be casually dismissed. I would also note in passing, once again, I do not believe that September 11th was a provocation. However, I do think that in the first place there are certainly elements extreme enough in the Bush administration to view such an occurrence in a very opportunistic fashion and to use it as such, and I also think that one should note that elements of the underground Reich have been deliberately portraying terrorist incidents which they have perpetrated, and these are elements that have in the past worked with some of these very same national security elements. They have been portraying some of their acts as work of the national security establishment in order to subvert and to discredit and ultimately overthrow the United States. As I've said, I believe this is a very complex scenario, one which should not be oversimplified, but at the same time, I think it's important to study these events and to bear in mind just how extreme some of these people are prepared to become. And again, the milieu here is the same milieu that ultimately spawned not only George Bush, but many of the people around him. The Lemnitzer, Dulles, Carl Wolf, Sunrise Negotiations, Paul Nitze, who later was elevated by the senior George Bush to oversee strategic estimates about the Soviet Union. These are the same people that ultimately spawned the Bush administration. Continuing with the discussion of Operation North Woods. Finally, there was a plan to, quote, make it appear that communist Cuban MiGs have destroyed a U.S. Air Force aircraft over international waters in an unprovoked attack, unquote. It was a particularly believable operation given the decade of shootdowns that had just taken place. In the final sentence of his letter to Secretary of Defense McNamara recommending the operations, Lemnitzer made a grab for even more power, asking that the Joint Chiefs be placed in charge of carrying out Operation North Woods and the invasion. It is recommended, he wrote, that this responsibility for both overt and covert military operations be assigned to the Joint Chiefs of Staff, unquote. At 2:30 on the afternoon of Tuesday, March 13, 1962, Lemnitzer went over last-minute details of Operation North Woods with his covert action chief, Brigadier General William H. Craig, and signed the document. He then went to a special meeting in McNamara's office. An hour later, he met with Kennedy's military representatives, Representative General Maxwell Taylor. What happened during those meetings is unknown. But 3 days later, President Kennedy told Lemnitzer that there was virtually no possibility that the U.S. would ever use overt military force in Cuba. Undeterred, Lemnitzer and the chiefs persisted, virtually to the point of demanding that they be given authority to invade and take over Cuba. By the way, in For the Record program number 190, an interview with Bill Davey, the author of Let Justice Be Done, we took a look at the fact that the Schlumberger Arms Depot raid that was participated in by, among others, Gordon Novell, one of the people who was involved with the anti-Castro milieu on the American Southern Rim, and one of the people who was investigated by Jim Garrison in connection with Kennedy's assassination. The Schlumberger Arms raid was ultimately to be used in the launching of a ship called the Santana, which in turn was going to carry Cuban exiles, anti-Castro Cuban exiles, who were going to be wearing Cuban military uniforms and were going to attack Guantanamo Naval Base and kill some of the U.S. Marines as part of Operation North Woods. Note, of course, that about a year and a half, a little over a year and a half after that meeting in March of 62, President Kennedy was killed. Skipping down. Within months, Lemnitzer was denied a second term as Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman and transferred to Europe as head of NATO. Years later, President Gerald Ford appointed Lemnitzer, a darling of the Republican right, to the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board. Lemnitzer's Cuba chief, Brigadier General Craig, was also transferred. Promoted to Major General, he spent 3 years as Chief of the Army Security Agency, NSA's military arm. By the way, remember that Gerald Ford's chief of staff was Dick Cheney, now vice president. Continuing. Because of the secrecy and illegality of Operation North Woods, all details remained hidden for 40 years. Lemnitzer may have thought that all copies of the relevant documents had been destroyed. He was not one to leave compromising material lying around. Following the Bay of Pigs debacle, for example, he ordered Brigadier General David W. Gray, Craig's predecessor as chief of the Cuba Project within the Joint Chiefs of Staff, to destroy all his notes concerning Joint Chiefs' actions and discussions during that period. Gray's meticulous notes were the only detailed official records of what happened within the Joint Chiefs of Staff during that time. According to Gray, Lemnitzer feared a congressional investigation and therefore wanted any incriminating evidence destroyed. With the evidence destroyed, Lemnitzer felt free to lie to Congress. When asked during secret hearings before a Senate committee if he knew of any Pentagon plans for a direct invasion of Cuba, he said he did not. Yet detailed Joint Chiefs of Staff invasion plans had been drawn up even before Kennedy was inaugurated, and additional plans had been developed since. The consummate planner and man of details also became evasive, suddenly encountering great difficulty in recalling key aspects of the operation as if he had been out of the country during the period. It was a sorry spectacle. Senator Gore called for Lemnitzer to be fired, quote, "We need a shake-up of the Joint Chiefs of Staff," he said, again quoting, "We direly need a new chairman as well as new members," unquote. No one had any idea of Operation North Woods. Because so many documents were destroyed, it's difficult to determine how many senior officials were aware of Operation North Woods. As has been described, the document was signed and fully approved by Lemnitzer and the rest of the Joint Chiefs and addressed to the Secretary of Defense for his signature. Skipping down. Even after Lemnitzer lost his job, the Joint Chiefs kept planning pretext operations at least into 1963. Among their proposals was a plan to deliberately create a war between Cuba and any of a number of its Latin American neighbors. This would give the United States military an excuse to come in on the side of Cuba's adversary and get rid of Castro. Quote, "A contrived Cuban attack on an OAS, Organization of American States member, could be set up," said one proposal, again quoting, "and the attacked state could be urged to take measures of self-defense and request assistance from the U.S. and OAS. The U.S. could almost certainly obtain the necessary two-thirds support among OAS members for collective action against Cuba," unquote. Among the nations they suggested that the United States secretly attack were Jamaica and Trinidad Tobago. Both were members of the British Commonwealth. Thus, by secretly attacking them and falsely blaming Cuba, the United States could lure England into the war against Castro. The report noted, quote, "Any of the contrived situations described above are inherently extremely risky in our democratic system, in which security can be maintained after the fact with very great difficulty. If the decision should be made to set up a contrived situation, it should be one in which participation by U.S. personnel is limited only to the most highly trusted covert personnel. This suggests the infeasibility of the use of military units for any aspect of the contrived situation," unquote. The report even suggested secretly paying someone in the Castro government to attack the United States. Quote, "The only area remaining for consideration, then, would be to bribe one of Castro's subordinate commanders to initiate an attack on the U.S. naval base at Guantanamo," unquote. The act suggested bribing a foreign nation to launch a violent attack on an American military installation was treason. In May of 1963, Assistant Secretary of Defense Paul H. Nitze sent a plan to the White House proposing, quote, "A possible scenario whereby an attack on a United States reconnaissance aircraft could be exploited toward the end of effecting the removal of the Castro regime," unquote. In the event Cuba attacked a U-2, the plan proposed sending in additional American pilots, this time on dangerous, unnecessary low-level reconnaissance missions with the expectation that they also would be shot down, thus provoking a war. Quote, "The U.S. could undertake various measures designed to stimulate the Cubans to provoke a new incident," said the plan. Nitze, however, did not volunteer to be one of the pilots. One idea involved sending fighters across the island on harassing reconnaissance, unquote, and show-off, unquote, missions, again quoting, "flaunting our freedom of action, hoping to stir the Cuban military to action." Thus, said the plan, depending above all on whether the Cubans were or could be made to be trigger-happy, the development of the initial downing of a reconnaissance plane could lead at best to the elimination of Castro, perhaps to the removal of Soviet troops and the installation of ground inspection in Cuba, or, at the least, to our demonstration of firmness on reconnaissance, unquote. About a month later, a low-level flight was made across Cuba, but unfortunately for the Pentagon, instead of bullets, it produced only a protest. Lemnitzer was a dangerous, perhaps even unbalanced right-wing extremist in an extraordinarily sensitive position during a critical period. But Operation North Woods also had the support of every single member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and even senior Pentagon official Paul Nitze argued in favor of provoking a phony war with Cuba. The fact that the most senior members of all the services and the Pentagons could be so out of touch with reality and the meaning of democracy would be hidden for 4 decades. And again, I think this is something to very seriously consider. Again, I do not believe that September 11th was a provocation. However, I do think that there are elements at least as extreme within the Bush administration proper that are acting in an opportunistic fashion. And when one has the possibility of nuclear terrorism, the already present discussion of the formation of a clandestine government, a shadow government, to basically take over in the event that Congress were to get nuked or Washington were to get nuked, I think one has to be aware of the possibilities. Again, it is my opinion that what September 11th is really is an attack by a hostile foreign power, what I call the Underground Reich, upon the United States, yet it is not a provocation in the usual sense of the word, but it is rather like France's situation in World War II, where France was, of course, attacked by Germany, but much of the French power elite, including much of their military, were more concerned about the Social Front of Léon Blum, their own center-left coalition government, and really were much more sympathetically disposed to the Germans than their own country, to their own country people, and were quite content to take advantage of the German invasion of France in order to basically effect a fascist control and collaboration. I think that's something to be borne very carefully in mind. September 11th made short, suppose Hitler had been in the White House when Pearl Harbor was attacked. It's basically what I think has happened. Nonetheless, the studying of situations like Operation North Woods, where we have people such as Lyman Lemnitzer of the Dulles Carl Wolf Sunrise negotiations, people like Paul Nitze, this is the same milieu that spawned George Bush. The various programs that I've done over the years are available from a CD and tape duplication service called Spitfire. That's S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E, one word. You can reach them at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. Email mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. That's S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E-L-I-S-T, one word, .com. You can visit the Real Audio-equipped Spitfire website, where the latest pair of half-hour segments are available for a week on Real Audio. And in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com, there are detailed annotated descriptions of each For the Record program. By the way, the description for the Record program 362 has been delayed in its posting on the Spitfire website. It will be there within a couple of days. Please note also that there are links in the For the Record descriptions about September 11th and on elsewhere on the Spitfire website to two URLs maintained by sister station WFMU. One of them is wfmu.org/Dave Emery, one word, D-A-V-E-E-M-O-R-Y. Those have more recent For the Record programs streaming on Real Audio. Older For the Record programs, at this point virtually the entire series, are available for download only on Real Audio at another linked URL. This concludes For the Record program number 363, Operation North Woods, being recorded on June 16th of 2002. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.